Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police departments. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
Oh,
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I will be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
When people try to figure out how to make $1 million, they have no idea how daunting that is. Because if you knew how to make $1 million, you go make it tomorrow. But since you can't figure out how to $1 million idea, you go somewhere and sit down. That's the wrong approach. If you apply your gift, your God-given gift that he gave you, you have millions already at your disposal. If you break it down inch by inch into things of sense, or the 10 by 10 theory, which is very simple. You don't need $1 million idea. You need a $10 idea. You need something that you do, your gift that God gave you, to make $10. That's all you got to be able to know. I don't care if it's cutting hair, cutting somebody's grass, washing somebody's car. I don't care if it's mowing somebody's lawn. I don't care if it's driving people to their destinations. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's baking cookies or pie. You have some braiding somebody's hair. You have something that you can do so well that someone will give you $10 for it. Write my paper for me. Do this for me. Somebody give you $10 for it. Once they give you $10, all you got to do is whatever you did to get that 10, do it 10 more times. You now, my friend, have $100. You have $100 simply because you took a $10 idea and you did it 10 times. Well, guess what? If you take that $100 that you made since you've done it 10 times and you do it 10 more times, I got news for you, my friend. You now have $1,000. $1,000, you make $1,000. Guess what all you got to do? You got to multiply that effort again. Do whatever you did to do $1,000, do it 10 more times. My friend, you now have $10,000. You got $10,000 now. Imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. Just imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. That's $120,000 a year. But I got news for you, my friend. Whatever you did, whatever it took to make yourself $10,000, all you got to do is do it 10 more times. 10 more times, my friend, you now have $100,000. I got news for you now. If you can make $100,000, you're just a step away from being a millionaire, man. Because now you hire a few more people to help you out, that you can do portions of what you do so you can duplicate that effort. And one more time, just one more time, do it 10 times. Man, that sounds hard. It is hard. But what else you got to do? What, you going to stop at the 100,000? All you got to do is duplicate your efforts by 10. You duplicate your efforts by 10, 10 times 100,000. Welcome to the club, my friends. You are now a millionaire. Congratulations. You became a millionaire with a $10 idea. So stop bogging yourself down trying to figure out how to make a million. Do what you can do to make $10. And then do the 10 by 10 theory. Inch by inch, anything's a cinch. Now here's the joyful part. Along the way, when you was down here making $20,000, but you did right here, and now all of a sudden you're making $30,000. Now you're making $100,000. But on the way to duplicating that times 10, you may stop along in here at $250,000. You got making $250,000 a year. That's way better than that $20,000 you had when you started. So there's joy in the process. Your life is actually a lot richer at $250,000. It'll become even more richer at $500,000. It becomes even richer than that at $750,000, $750,000. If you don't get to the million, man, you gonna trip because you're making $900,000 a year? No, you're gonna be happy. What, you don't make the million, so you only make $700,000 a year? You can't find happiness in $7,000? Something wrong with you, man. There's joy in the process. That's how you make $1 million.
All right. Well, we're going to do that with, and today our primary topic is R. Kelly Law Study Clinic. R. Kelly got convicted of all charges in his racketeering case yesterday. We don't have any audio of it, but that's what I'm putting out there. If you guys want to talk about that, 619-768-2945. Or anything you want to talk about, I just figure that's a hot trending topic, so we can talk about that. But before we get to that, please buy, what's his name, Steve Harvey. That's a basic business model we're going to follow starting this month. Now, this is September the 28th, 2021. We only got a couple of days left in this month. But we're going to start with that. We're going to take not so much a $10 idea, but a $100 idea. All right. And before I get into what that $100 idea is, let me play a little inspirational clip here, which I've played on here plenty of times before, but it's by an 8-year-old. Well, excuse me, not an 8-year-old. She's 12 years old now. She was 11 years old when this audio was played. And the idea is how Laura Nelson took a $800 idea. Well, let's listen to it, because if she can do it with $800, we're going to do it with $100 to start.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home,
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account. He said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
Now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the tiny home nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing.
If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
All right, so Laura's 12 years old right now. We're not going to do a $10. Now, Laura had an $800 idea at 11. Okay, it's working out for her. We're going to do a $100 idea. We got 2 days to pull that off, but we already got the land for it, and we're going to start with a tent, which we're going to Airbnb that. But that's we're starting off with one. I often say everything starts with one. So September, that's our $100 idea. Now, the next month, October. We're going to do as Steve Harvey recommended. We're going to multiply that 1 by 10. So we've already got the land for that too, but we can probably only put about 3 structures on that one. So we're going to have to get at least probably 2 more parcels of land and get that done. But essentially, and what we're going to do is we're not going to try to keep on multiplying by 10 by 10 by 10 every month. It's, you know, once we hit 10, which should be next month, then every month we just want to maintain that stability, 10 per month. But everything starts with 1, just like with Laura Nelson. So between now and, like I said, we only got 2 more days left in this month, we'll have, the good thing is we already have the land and we already have the tent. All right. And then with these other, well, next month, we'll probably do a combination of tents and cabins. We'll probably do that next month. But in any event, we got 2 more days left in this month, so we'll give you an update on that tomorrow. We were on yesterday, but we were on late. We weren't on long. We were on at, I think, 7:30. But we were only on for about maybe 10 minutes. And that's just to... so we can at least say we didn't miss a Monday. Let's see. Anyway, today's topic is a trending topic. We can talk about that or anything else you want to talk about. R. Kelly yesterday, and I, you know, typically I have audio on this, but the usual way I've been doing audio, I can't, anyway. I got to find a new way to get audio on here. But anyway, he was convicted on all counts of, let me see, let me go to USA Today. Let me not mess this up. He was, let's see, news. R. Kelly. But he was convicted on racketeering charges. I got to see. And it'll be interesting to see, because racketeering involves more than one person. So, but they didn't have anybody else on trial but R. Kelly. Let's see. R. Kelly found guilty of sex trafficking. Now what happens? And I think he gets sentenced next May. Okay, let me read this out of USA Today. Following weeks of graphic and emotional testimony, R. Kelly was convicted. Oh, man, now his head pops up. Okay. R. Kelly was convicted Monday on all counts in his New York. Oh, now something else pops up. All these pop-ups. All right, but now what happens? The victims in this case, your voices were heard and the justice was finally served. Acting U.S. Attorney Jacqueline Cullis said Monday outside of Brooklyn Courthouse where a jury convicted the 54-year-old R&B star on all nine counts of sex trafficking and racketeering following less than 2 days of deliberation. You know, question I'm putting out there to you guys, do you think R. Kelly got a fair trial? Because prior to him getting even charged, on Netflix, I think they have a documentary, I haven't watched it, titled Surviving R. Kelly. I think that's the name of the documentary. And it wasn't favorable. Now, and you know, Netflix is global. Now, I'm saying did he get a fair trial, because that documentary, which did not shed any positive light on him at all, from what I've heard, because I've never watched it, haven't watched it. The same strategy was used with Bill Cosby. Now, they didn't do a documentary about him and put it on Netflix. But what they did is somebody bankrolled a sustained public relations campaign against Cosby. And public relations costs money. Costs money. Somebody had to have the public relations, political clout, and financing to keep Bill Cosby's name in the national news media until he got charged. Because every week that he didn't get charged, or every 2 weeks that he didn't get charged, or whatever, well, at least every month, you know what, if another woman would pop up, if nobody got charged in there, it kept on until they went and dug up this lady, Constant, and the guy was running for DA's office in, I guess, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. And, so the media was used to, I mean, and more women, me too, hashtag me too, piled up, and then he got charged and went to trial. And I would say the same thing with R. Kelly. And probably Harvey Weinstein. Now I don't know whether I didn't follow these cases, so I don't have a dog in the fight, so I don't know who did or didn't do what. But in any event, the verdict sends a loud. Oh, you know what? Let's look up the legal definition of racketeering. I've heard of it. But let's get a legal dictionary here. I mean, Racketeering is a type of criminal activity in which money is extorted from a victim by threat or force. Now, I'm going to read that again. Racketeering is a type of criminal activity in which money is extorted from a victim by threat or force. Now, they probably have some other definitions of racketeering, but based on this definition of racketeering, I can't see R. Kelly extorting money from women. I can see it the other way around, but based on this definition, let's go to, and I don't have a dog in this fight. I didn't follow the case. I didn't read the charges. I'm just trying to find out, you know, what, that's why we titled this podcast R. Kelly Law Study Clinic. We're here to learn. All right. What is an example of racketeering? Okay, let me read this. What is an example of racketeering? What are examples of racketeering? Racketeering can take many forms. Okay. Murder. Well, nobody got killed in this case. Money laundering. I don't think that happened. Financial or economic crimes. Kidnapping, sexual exploitation now, sexual exploitation of children, okay, because they say, R. Kelly had sex with underage children. You know what, age of consent. This always baffles me, the age of consent thing, or underage. My grandmother on my mother's side, she was married at 15 years old. Stayed with the same husband until death do they part. They had seven children together. My mother was one of them. At 15. Nobody said nothing then. Elvis, teenagers, Elvis Presley. Jerry Lee Lewis married teenagers. Bill Wyman of the Rolling Stones, with the parents' permission, married a teenager. Let's see, age of consent by state. Let's go with that. Okay. All right. In Florida, the age of consent is 18. The minimum age of a victim is 16. In Georgia, the age of consent is 16. In Hawaii, the age of consent is 16. In Idaho, the age of consent is 18. All right, let's see. Okay, where were we? All right, I'm going in alphabetical order now. Alabama, 16, but the minimum age of a victim is 12. That's in Alabama. The minimum age of a defendant in order to prosecute is 16. That's in Alabama. Alaska is 16. Arizona, 18. Arkansas, 16. California, 18. Connecticut is 16. Delaware is 18. District of Columbia is 16. Florida is 18. Georgia is 16. Hawaii is 16. Idaho, 18. Illinois, 17. And R. Kelly, some of his, 17. Okay. Indiana, 16. Iowa. All right, hold on. Let's skip on down. Because he got convicted in New York State. The age of consent in New York State is 17. Okay. Now, let's go to one more thing. Age was it? Age to get married by state. All right, let's go with that. Okay, and this basically runs along the same. The age to get married. Now this is 2021. The age to get married in Illinois is 16. Okay, I'm trying to get a. All right, as of July 1st, 2019, 12 states have no minimum age when all the exemptions are taken into account. That's California, Idaho, Maine, this is to get married, Massachusetts, Michigan, Mississippi, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, Washington State, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Okay, now, with parental consent, all right, there's no minimum age in California and Mississippi with parental consent. In Massachusetts, with parental consent, a man can marry a woman who's 12, a young lady, who's 12 years old. That's with parental consent in 2021 in Massachusetts. Oh, I hear some cat calls out there from the peanut gallery. I'm the messenger. This is online. I'm reading it. This is not my opinion. I'm reading it. You can look it up for yourself. New Hampshire, the age of consent is 13. Hawaii, the age, this is to get married with parental consent. Hawaii, 15. Missouri, 15. Alabama, 16. Alaska, 16. Arizona, 16. Arkansas, 16. Colorado, 16. Connecticut, 16. Florida, 16. Georgia, 16. Idaho, 16. Illinois, 16. Iowa, 16. Kansas, 16. Let's see. All right. Yeah, a whole lot of 16 years. All right. Oregon, Indiana, 17. Nebraska, 17. Oregon, 17. Washington State, 17. Okay. Kentucky is 18. West, all right, we done those. All right, so two states have no minimum with parental consent, and that's California and Mississippi. Although, if there are no parents involved, you got to be 18 in California, and then you have to be in Mississippi, you have to be 15. So in Mississippi, a man, regardless of age, and a young lady, 15 years old, in Mississippi, is not illegal to have sex. In Massachusetts, with parental consent, this is marriage by age in 2021, and Massachusetts is the youngest, you know, it's 12 years old. However, with parental consent, without parental consent in the same state of Massachusetts, you got to be 18. All right, now, R. Kelly, let me look that up. What were R. Kelly charges? Let me look that up. R. Kelly charges. Now, remember, this is a R. Kelly Law Study Clinic. We're just here to learn. You know, what is racketeering? What's the age of consent? Without parents? With parents. Okay. Okay, R. Kelly charges. Um, All right, racketeering and sex trafficking. Well, let's look up the definition of definition of sex trafficking in the United States. Okay. What is the legal definition of trafficking? Okay, the act of buying or selling unusually illegal goods for drug trafficking. Now, that's a general definition of trafficking. Let's go with what is the United States definition of What are the three elements of human trafficking? Okay, the elements of both definitions can be described using a three-element framework focused on traffickers. One, acts. Two, means. Three, purpose. Okay, we would have to all get into the details of his case for that. What are the three most forms of trafficking? Sex trafficking, forced labor, also known as slavery, and debt bondage. Oh, boy, that's a big one. That's wide open. Okay, anyway, let's go to the phone lines here. This is R. Kelly Law Study Clinic. Because me, myself, that's why I had to look up what is racketeering. I heard of it a gazillion times. Don't know what it is and know how it was applied to this case. And well, what do you guys have to say? 425, Mike, Robin, good morning. Robin? Okay, she might have stepped away. while we're waiting for her to come to the phone. All right, see, human trafficking. Let me see if I can find his charges, R. Kelly specific charges. R. Kelly... specific criminal charges. Let's see if we can find that. He's facing a possibility of life in prison. All right, here's a breakdown of the charges. So let's see. Let's read that. Okay, here's a breakdown of R. Kelly. Robin, you back? All right. He's somewhere in the background. All right, criminal charges included one count of racketeering based on sexual exploitation of children, kidnapping, forced labor, and eight violations of the Mann Act, a sex trafficking statute. Racketeering is a charge often associated with organized crime, but it can be applied to any ongoing coordinated illegal scheme or criminal enterprise to carry out a common purpose. In this case, prosecutors said that Mr. Kelly and his inner circle, that means more than one person, worked for more than two decades in multiple states to promote the singer's brand, to recruit girls, groupies. What musical group doesn't have groupies? They buy the tickets. Anyway, and young women for sexual exploitation and to produce pornography. Within a single racketeering count were 14 individual counts, some of which themselves had separate parts, and some of those parts had additional questions, each which the jury had to consider in turn. The acts included bribery, kidnapping, forced labor, and violations of the Mann Act. The racketeering count carried a sentence of up to 20 years. The jury separately considered eight Mann Act counts related to the transportation and the coercion of two women, including a minor. Each of the Mann Act counts carried up to 10 years imprisonment. Let's see. Well, he was convicted on all counts. Okay, so, Robin, you there? All right, she's getting close. Let's read what the Mann Act is about. The Mann Act, also known as the White Slave Act of 1910, is a federal law that criminalizes the transportation of any woman or girl for the purpose of prostitution or debauchery. Now, see, debauchery, that's a big word. Because what, that can mean different things to different people. But in any event, the jury convicted them on all counts. So you got to go with the jury. Once again, I don't know the facts, and I wasn't there to, you know, it's a whole lot I don't know. Or any other immoral purpose. That's a broad, but that's the law, though. The law is very broad and subject to interpretation. The Mann Act, passed in June 1910, named after Illinois Congressman James R. Mann, evoked the Commerce Clause to felonize the use of interstate or foreign commerce to transport women for immoral purposes. The act was aimed at prostitution, immorality, and human trafficking. Congress appointed a commission in 1907 to investigate the problem with immigrant prostitutes. You know, this country is really hypocritical, because when you were trafficking slaves over from Africa, because not all slaves were out in that field picking cotton. A lot of them were bed wenches. But the Mann Act didn't pass until 1910. So the law wasn't on the books. You can basically do what you want to do. Even now in 2021. In any event, okay, like I said, a jury, you know, they sat through the trial, and they had the jury instructions, and they had their legal definitions and whatnot. So they convicted on all 12. I wasn't there, and I'm looking at what some of these words and acts mean. Let's see. All right, Robin. Okay, Robin's out there somewhere. Okay. Well, Robin, your mic's open when you're ready to speak on that. Either way you look at it, Mr. Kelly is in some, he's in some deep doo-doo. So he doesn't get sentenced until next May. But it's a high-profile case. And speaking of high-profile cases, The other three policemen in the George Floyd case, that case has been very, very quiet. You don't hear anything about those three other officers. And also the case that happened, that was at least initiated, happened before the George Floyd case in South Carolina, that jogger. Those three, that's been very quiet, and at least one of the George Floyd cases has been tried. All right, well, in a few we're going to go to the phone lines and take, I'm going to put Robin, if. But I don't know the ages of, maybe you, some of you guys know. What were the ages of, what were the ages of the ladies involved? I don't know. But apparently this case was tried in New York State. So whatever the age of consent was, with or without parents, he didn't reach that bar. All right, we're going to be back in a couple of minutes. Take your calls.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They want to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show me your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
Welcome to CBS This Morning. We're going to begin with your big explosive interview with R. Kelly. Wow.
He had a lot to get off his chest. No, he actually said he welcomed the opportunity to speak.
Right.
And boy, did we let him speak.
And everybody has switched their channels and turned on to us to see it this morning.
We let him speak.
So let's get right to it, because R. Kelly is breaking his silence about the sexual abuse charges that landed him in jail last month. The embattled R&B singer spoke with Gayle for nearly 80 minutes yesterday. It is an interview that you will see only on CBS This Morning, and he says all the women now accusing him of physical and sexual abuse, he says all of them are lying.
That's what he says. Chicago prosecutors have charged Kelly with 10 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse,
Authorities say three of the four alleged victims were underage when the suspected crimes happened. Now, Kelly has pleaded not guilty. Sources tell CBS News federal and state authorities in at least two states, New York and Illinois, are now investigating a variety of allegations. The singer, as you know, has faced intense scrutiny for more than a decade now. It was reignited in January after the Lifetime docuseries Surviving R. Kelly featured interviews with seven accusers and former members of his inner circle. They all say that Kelly preys on vulnerable women and young girls. I am surprised that you agreed to do it. Why are you sitting down with us today?
I'm very tired of all of the lies. I've been hearing things and, you know, and seeing things on the blogs, and, you know, I'm just tired.
What are the lies that you're hearing that disturb you most?
Oh, my God. All of them. That little girl's trapped in the basement, helicopters over my house, trying to rescue someone that doesn't need rescuing because they're not in my house, handcuffing people, starving people. I have a harem, a cult.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even really know what a cult is, but I know I don't have one, you know. Mm-hmm.
Have you done anything that you regret? Have you done anything wrong?
Lots of things wrong when it comes to women that I apologize, but I apologize in those relationships at the time I was in the relationships.
Have you broken any laws when it comes to women?
Absolutely not.
The six-part series interviewed 50 people, family members, your former tour manager, numerous women who all claim that you abused them.
Yeah.
Are you saying everybody in that documentary was not telling the truth about you? Everybody?
If you really look at that documentary, which I'm sure you have.
I have.
Everybody said something bad about me. Nobody said nothing good.
Mm-hmm.
They was describing Lucifer. I'm not Lucifer. I'm a man. I make mistakes, but I'm not a devil, and by no means am I a monster.
I'm going to name the names. Andrea Kelly, your ex-wife, Kitty Jones, Lisa Van Allen, Lizette Martinez, Geronda Pace, Faith Rogers, Asante McGee. You're saying everything they said in that documentary about you is not true.
They are lying on me.
Why would these women say the same thing about you, that you are controlling, that you are abusive, that you tell women when to eat, when to go to the bathroom, when they can sleep, where they can dress? Why would all these women tell these different stories about you if they were not true and they don't know each other? That defies logic to me.
Right, right. Until you hear the explanation. You can start a rumor on a guy like me or a celebrity just like that. All you have to do is push a button on your phone and say, so-and-so did this to me. R. Kelly did this to me. And if you get any traction from that, if you're able to write a book from that, if you're able to get a reality show, then any girl that I had a relationship in the past that it just didn't work out, she can come and say the same exact thing.
Are you blaming this on social media?
I'm talking about the power of social media.
In 2008, R. Kelly was found not guilty on 14 counts of child pornography after prosecutors in Chicago failed to convince a jury that he was a man seen in a sex tape with a girl as young as 13.
What do you want to say to your fans?
Last month, Kelly was indicted again, this time charged with aggravated criminal sexual abuse of four women, including three who the charges say were minors at the time. Have you ever had sex with anyone under the age of 17?
No.
Never?
No.
I have to tell you, it's so hard to believe that based on all that we've read.
I'm going
to
tell you something, Gail. There's one
thing. What the women said about you.
What women said about me. What women. So nobody's allowed to be mad at me and be scorned and lie on me.
Mm-hmm. So they're lying on you. That's your explanation. They're lying on you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You feel that people have maligned your character?
I have been assassinated. I have been buried alive. But I'm alive.
So I think the point you're making is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you have never held anybody against their will.
I don't need to. Why would I?
Well, I'm
how stupid would it
never
be
held
for
anybody.
R. Kelly, with all I've been through in my way, way past, to hold somebody, let alone 4, 5, 6, 50, you said. How stupid would I be to do that?
I didn't say you were holding.
That's stupid, guys.
I didn't.
Is this camera on me?
Yes.
That's stupid.
Use your common sense. Don't forget the blogs. Forget how you feel about me. Hate me if you want to. Love me if you want. But just use your common sense. How stupid would it be for me to, with my crazy past and what I've been through, oh, right now I just think I need to be a monster and hold girls against their will, chain them up in my basement, and don't let them eat and don't let them out unless they need some shoes down the street from their uncle.
Robert,
stop it. Y'all quit playing. Quit playing.
Robert.
I didn't do this stuff. This is not me. Y'all, I'm fighting for my life. Y'all killing me with this. I gave you 30 years of my career.
Robert.
30 years of my career. Y'all trying to kill me. You're killing me, man. This is not about music. I'm trying to have a relationship with my kids, and I can't do it.
What?
Y'all just don't want to believe the truth. You don't want to believe it.
At this point, we briefly pause the interview to give Kelly a moment. His publicist helped calm him down.
I hope this camera keep going.
No, we're
going
to let the camera
keep rolling.
This is
not true. This doesn't even make sense. Why would I hold all these women? Their mothers and fathers told me, we're going to destroy your career.
But Kelly's emotions remained raw.
It's real girls out there missing. It's real young girls out there being abducted, being raped, okay? They really are on chains. They really do have chains on their wrist, and they can't get out.
Robert,
and they're ending up buried in
debt. Robert, we have to have a conversation.
This is
really,
not me.
I don't want you just ranting at the camera.
I came here for them to hear me
talk. But
I need help.
What kind of help?
This is the kind of help I need.
Yes, what kind of help?
I need somebody to help me not have a big heart, because my heart is so big. People betray me, and I keep forgiving them.
You sound like you're playing the victim here. You sound like R. Kelly. You do. When I listen to you, it does sound
like
you're playing the victim
card. I'm just telling the truth. And the reason I'm emotional,
Robert,
and I apologize for that, is because this is the first time I was able to say
speak.
Something.
Yeah.
I've said nothing.
Gail, you remained tough and calm throughout that.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't do any good if we both got hysterical, or if we both got very emotional. And you could see, he felt that in his mind, everybody's lying. I said, but there's so many people who are telling the same story. And he kept going back. I said, but the women don't know each other. And he said, how do you know they don't know each other? On social media, you're connected. He thinks everybody's trying to do a book deal or they're trying to do a movie. And that really people are conspiring against you.
I have to say, I've never seen anything like that. I don't know how that went on for over an hour and a half. What was he like before the interview? Because you didn't really know him that well.
No, I don't. I mean, in fairness, he didn't rant for the whole hour and a half, but he got very emotional several times. I met him maybe beyond 5 years ago at a party where you just say, hi, how are you? You know, it's not the time to say, remember we met 5 years ago? I hate it when people do that. Mm-hmm. So I did ask, can we have a conversation before the interview got started? I wanted to say we're going to give you a platform to say whatever you want to say. It's no secret that he lives at Trump Tower in Chicago. So we went to his apartment there, and we had a conversation. And you walk into his apartment. There's a big welcome home. There's a Christmas tree that he keeps up all year long since his mother died back in 1993. He's very close to his mother, misses her very much because it was her favorite holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So he keeps the Christmas tree up all year long. It was like 90 degrees in there because he was resting his voice. He said he was going to be singing later.
But what he is accused of is dastardly.
Exactly.
Raping young girls repeatedly over decades.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you did, Gail, was allow him to tell his story and to see, though, his behavior, his temperament, is I think what is probably what is most revealing of this interview as well. The pounding of the fist, the getting up. I was worried about you. I was actually worried about you when I saw the pictures.
Well, it's funny. A favorite son, favorite daughter, and Oprah all called me and said, were you afraid? Did you think he was going to hit you? I actually never thought that. I think that I thought I might get accidentally clobbered, but I didn't think that he would deliberately try to hurt me. I never felt in danger talking to him. I just felt that he had a lot of emotion. He wanted to release it. And, you know, when it was all over, we had a conversation. We said goodbye. And I think at the end of the day, he was glad that he was able to say what he wanted to say.
Okay.
But it's hard to believe when you say, Robert, there are so many allegations and so many accusations, and you've never had sex with anybody under the age of 17.
And it took this jury less than a day to deliberate.
Yes, exactly. Exactly right.
There's more coming, right?
And he says more will come out on his side of the story, too.
And we have more this
yes, we do. In our next half hour, Kelly talks about the two women who live with him and the allegations that he controls their lives, allegations that both women deny. We talked to them, too. We'll share that a little bit.
All right. So that was an interview that Gail King did with R. Kelly sometime before the trial. Anyway, R. Kelly Law Clinic, 425, are you there? 425, okay. You're doing something. 314, area code, your mic is open.
Hey, what are you talking about today, man?
R. Kelly.
I don't know nothing about him.
Yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about R. Kelly. What did he do? He's a basketball player.
He was convicted of sex trafficking, racketeering, and he was convicted on about 11 charges.
Is he a basketball player?
No, singer. You know, I believe I can fly stuff like that. Entertainer.
I don't know about that kind of stuff.
Okay, well.
Nobody
and everybody knows R. Kelly. Anyway, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, I guess normal things, L.A.
Has the weather changed there yet? Well, where are you at, Mississippi or Louisiana? Not Mississippi.
Down Louisiana.
Okay. Well, I imagine things are still getting back to order overall. Some people have gotten back
together. People down here got these real huge side panel trucks that they go around and pick up debris and down tree branches and that.
Okay.
And apparently it comes from federal assistance.
FEMA.
Yeah. You know, you want to talk about the refugees and that. That's a bunch of scam.
We talked about that later.
Most recent Haitian refugees. I was sent their ass back home.
Yo, speaking of which, I'm glad you brought that up. Did you see or hear, they showed some visuals last week of some, I guess, rangers or whatever, Homeland Security people on horseback.
Yeah, that's the kind of terrain they were operating in. You ain't going to be out there driving no Jeep. And you got people all on the land, they defecating all over the place. Who's going to be walking around out there having to dodge a patty here and there?
Now, what about
no
the use of whips?
Use no whip. That was the rain. But the thing is, why come the man didn't comply to authority?
Well, you got a point.
And also, he was bringing food and fruit into the country. You're not supposed to bring food and fruit into the United States.
Another good point.
What's the possibility of it having pests that can adversely affect the agriculture systems in the United States? That can adversely affect the livestock industry in the U.S., causing havoc where you would have to pay more. LA,
right.
You wouldn't want that.
Nope.
I've tried coming into the country with vegetation before, and it was taken from me.
That can happen. I know.
So why
would
you
are going?
Yeah, why would you let this do that? If you're going to buy, and you know, they say that these people staged way down in Chile with the help of some damn non-for-profit. Then you have those religious groups, Lutheran charity, Catholic charity, every other that's working to bring refugees into the, why they bring them in the United States? The United States give tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to some of the countries in order to alleviate them from the things that people say that they trying to flee from.
Right.
Then when they get here, you got to take care of them. That's double money.
Well, something that you brought up last week, matter of fact, I think you played the audio of Clinton saying there are 10,000 vacant houses in not Baltimore, Detroit. And
yeah, Detroit
and
Syria should be
into,
the ones to develop them.
Right, exactly.
I thought that Detroit had over 600,000 blacks.
Hello?
Child of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Interesting. I was kind of surprised he said that.
I wasn't. Blacks being used by the Democrats forever. Democrats and some slick Negroes who's telling them all this crazy stuff about they Africans. Crazy stuff that Haitians is their brothers and sisters. Haitians ain't your brothers and sisters. Haitians are Haitians.
Well, true.
And you know,
but you know
thing,
some
if you're
people,
taking people,
they define by skin color. Some people think all people with the same skin, and there's really nobody with the same skin color. All have
well,
the exact
if
same.
If you ain't Lily, if you're not Lily White. But here's the thing, too. what happened to the whole concept of brain drain? If you're taking people out of these countries, is you not draining the country of its brain?
Yeah, you're right. And that's that country's an intellectual resource.
And then when Donald Trump made the remark about shithole countries, well, he was absolutely right. You ever been to some of these places that don't have no sewage? And you probably had these in your at back home. You dig a hole, you put a box around it, you put a top on it that's cut out where your butt can be exposed to drop fecal matter down into the hole. That's what they call them, outhouses.
Right. I've been in two outhouses. I had to use one for about a week once.
Absolutely.
I've been around three. Yeah.
And some places, all they got, you know, in some of those places in Ghana, you go in them service stations, they just got a hole in the floor. You got to squat.
And I
hope
that
you don't splash on, you don't have to splash on your shoes or your pants legs.
Right. Yeah,
you ever wonder why come
them
Arabs wear them galabias? All they got look like a big gown. They just pull it up. They don't have no toilet seats to sit on. Hey, I was in a hotel in Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in Lalibela. I'm not sure. The hotel didn't have no toilet seats.
Oh, man, I saw that in the Philippines.
You hover over the
bathroom.
Damn toilet and do what you got to do. And they ain't got no toilet seat. If you sit on the rim of the toilet, it's cold.
And I don't even want to sit on it or nothing like that because you don't think about all those germs.
Absolutely. And you know the funny thing about it. In some Japanese modern hotels, you go in the bathroom, what do you have? You got the squat. I mean modern hotel. Because it's what they do in society.
Yeah, that's what they do. I'm looking at that as a skill. I saw one of those types when I was, first time I was over in Italy. And a good thing I didn't have to do a number two. Because I
didn't have a hole in the floor?
Yeah, Well, it was a porcelain hole.
Yeah, right on down the drain.
You had to squat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at that. I ain't got no experience in doing that.
So people going back to these countries, they're crazy as heck. They be walking the water coming back over here to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And the people from there come over here, they should be going home, redeveloping, cleaning up, and trying to rebuild that where earthquakes has tore down. What they running from?
Right.
And the United States, this Democratic Party is using these folks. How many black males? How many blacks in U.S. prisons?
Just one. Now, some say two, but I say one.
I think it's like 800,000 plus. If you got 800,000 Americans in prison, wouldn't it be to your benefit to try to rehabilitate them where they can come out and be productive citizens?
Yeah, it would.
Because now they're being taken care of. Then you're going to bring immigrants into the country, refugees, and you got to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, that ain't going to last long. With technology, that's going to remove and alleviate all that manual labor. Now, if I was the president, I would allow that. But I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Clinton was off. He said 10,000. I'm reading here, 29.5% of the housing stock in Detroit is vacant. There are 102,333 vacant housing units, or 28% of the city's total housing stock. That's a lot of housing.
That's in Detroit.
That's in Detroit.
What's peculiar about that city?
Peculiar?
Mm-hmm.
Well, back when I was back then in the mid-90s. Mostly
what's
black
peculiar?
Folks.
Mostly black, yeah.
Mostly black. Black mayor back then, predominantly black city council, mostly black judges. Yeah, black entrepreneurs, but mostly black.
Black folks. Prosecutors.
Yeah, black prosecutors. I think Kim Worthy, if she's still the prosecutor up there, Wayne County, she's been one for decades up there. I haven't kept up with her, but she held that post for a long time. I don't know if she's still.
And the politics are Democrats.
Right. Oh yeah, Democrat the whole time.
Black or in. Black, populated, and Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we can point out some other cities. Same problem. Same demographic,
yeah,
same problem.
Yeah, they are.
But
wonder
they're all
why.
Democrat. They're all Democrats.
Mm-hmm. I think some of these populations are just cursed, man.
Well, I know for one thing a lot.
You don't try it everything.
Social programs are expensive. And they're not necessarily going to solve the problems that you think they're going to solve.
Well, let's look at it like
this. I would say
that's
one of the things that happened to Detroit.
Who's paying for these social programs? Who's paying for these social programs?
Taxpayers.
Which taxpayer? Because the people that's receiving the social programs ain't paying because they don't have no meaningful job.
True.
It's those people that moved out and got the hell away from there. Now you left with a situation where you're going to be kowtowing to the federal government for stuff. It ain't going to last. And then they're going to have stipulation. Well, we need your people to vote for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you got politicians that specialize in social programs, well, they ain't going to want to end because they make money off of that.
Right.
To prepare somebody so that they can be self-sustaining, raising a family, functional family, not none of that it take a village stuff. It's got to be functional. What's a functional family? You got mother and father.
Mother and father.
You got children in school. And you got grandparents, real grandparents. Then it's repeated. How long does it take to produce a functional family? You ever thought about that?
A functional what?
Family.
Man, that can take some time. I mean, we talking about generations, grandparents, parents, and kids.
Yes. From when a child is born, how long does it take to produce a functional family? That is, if you got, if they are born into a functional family. Now, if they ain't born into a functional family, ain't no telling. But a child is born, child go to school, 18 years old.
Right.
When they get out of school, they go to college, another 22 years old, maybe 26. Mm. Okay. Then they, at the same thing, time, the female is doing the same thing. Then they marry. And they get established. Then they have kids. So you got 25 years with the mother and father. They have kids. They got to come up. That's another 25 years.
That's 50 years.
Then they have kids. Well, the mother and father, at the meantime, they're moving on into grandparents. So you're talking about 50, maybe 75 years.
Right.
Get back to functionality. We're not talking
almost
about building family wealth. We're talking about functionality. So to build family wealth, you're probably talking about another 25 years, 100 years.
Bare minimum. Yeah, bare minimum.
So what we're saying is that segments of Black America is 100 years behind. Now, some people say 40. I would like to probably say 50. Everything
50
goes
is, I guess, is a safe number. That's a half century.
African countries, they are probably 120, 160 years behind something like the United States. Over the last 50 years,
and...
absolutely, even if they tried, even if they cheated, if they had to develop it themselves, ain't no telling how long it'd take. Then you take, that's just the way it is. If you look at the amount of aid that they received in the last 50 years, it adds up to about $20 billion a year for some countries.
Mm-hmm.
Haiti don't receive $5.4 billion since 2010. United States gave Haiti $268 million this year. They ain't going to do it.
Well,
U.S. is just wasting money. And when Trump was elected, first thing he done was start cutting that type aid, developmental aid.
Yeah,
you've got Africans. Amishi Boye, she used to work for the World Bank. She said it's a waste of money. A Zambian lady.
Well, like I said, social programs are expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive.
And
but,
what do they get you here in the United States?
With the social program?
Social program. He's talking about, Joe Biden, they're talking about putting more money in Head Start.
Man.
Well, hell, Head Start is not doing what it was promised to do. Because look at the number of children that can't read at the fourth grade.
Right.
And people get pissed off at you. Blacks get pissed off at you when you talk like this. But, hell, if it didn't exist, you couldn't talk about it, could you?
Well, we got to tighten up.
Now,
well,
let me tell you something else. Too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when humans walked out of their place of origination, Africa, they walked out. You know how they walked out? They walked out in bands. They walked out in bands. It wasn't a whole damn group that left at one time looking like a bunch of army ants. They walked out in bands. Homo erectus, when he started walking, he walked out. Some went to the left. Some went straight ahead. Some made a right turn.
Well, let me ask you this, Pianchi. What do you think about the concept of Pangea, the supercontinent? Because the way I'm looking at it, because Africa or the continent thing, that's politicized. So I'm looking at, Pangea. There was a supercontinent, and over millions of years, it's evolved to what we have now.
Well, the human beings that you're looking at today,
which are Homo sapiens,
is probably 200,000 years old.
Okay, that's a long time.
The other creatures going back a million years, they wasn't fully developed human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Some people was ape-like. Lived in trees. They had to live in trees because they get ate up. They stayed on the ground.
Right.
So,
200 million years. Well, you said 200,000 years?
About 200,000.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. And people, you got blacks today saying them was our ancestors, all bull crap. When them people left Africa, humanoid, and they went to the left going up into Europe, straight ahead going up into Central Asia, to the right going over to places like India, and they stayed in them areas for thousands of years.
Right.
And after you stay in an area for 1,000 years, you ain't what you were before you got there no more.
I agree. Well, it's just like when people go on vacation now. And they go, the heated climate, come back with a tan. Change happens there. I mean, slowly, but you're right. Over thousands of years, your body adapts, changes.
Yeah, you're not the same.
Yeah,
people.
Not the same anymore.
Culture change, language change, everything change.
Mm-hmm.
Biological makeup change because your body is going to adapt. I hear people saying that black Americans is ancient Egyptians. Oh, bull crap.
No.
You have to ask yourself, well, with all the modernity you got in the United States, why come you're not building like they did?
Well, a lot of Americans, in my opinion, are addicted to the comfort and conveniences that exist, so they really don't have to. You know, what's that term? Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Because if you wasn't doing it where you came from, how are you going to do it here?
Right.
When people say that slave built America. Even today, they don't have sanitation sewers.
Now we don't know how to build. Well, you're a builder, but we don't have enough builders out here.
Even today, you got in them places, you don't have sanitation sewers, don't have running water, you don't have electricity. And they didn't even have electricity back in them days, so I spot you that one. Water's always been the same, what you can carry on your head, where you got to go. And sewage always been the same. You dig a hole in the ground and squat or go to the happy bush.
Well, that bush
now, the thing
so
is that you got a lot of young blacks today that's doing great things and making inroads into innovation, into the sciences, and they're going to school, coming out with tough subjects, not enough, nowhere near enough. But I don't think you, I think you pretty much saturated to the best that you're going to get the way you're doing it. So if you look at all the engineers, I think that you're probably the best that you're going to get out of black society. Right now it's about 4%. If you get 6 or 8% of the engineers in the country being black, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to get that much.
Hmm. Yeah.
Now, you know what all that talk has done? It's facing
what's it?
The reality. That's the reality.
Right.
But like I said before, it's a lot of opportunities here in the U.S. Especially looking at the next horizon, which is going to be trying to do things in outer space. Man is only going to do so much here on Earth, and he's going to get to a stalemate. Can't go no further. And if what you got now is practical, the next line of thinking is going to be the impractical, which everybody is not going to be able to participate in. Flying cars, for one thing.
Well, you probably know about this. They had the first all-civilian space flight, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that woman of color was not a black American. She was from Guam, by the way. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, now, what do you say that with the flying cars and the thing, opportunities like that, saying some people won't, what will be, do you think, the qualifications? I mean, I imagine you're going to have more than a driver's license to do that.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to be certified.
I guess you're going to have to learn how to fly, for one.
Yeah, unmanned aerial vehicles, it'll be an aerial vehicle. It's going to be limited to operating in certain areas because you can't go up too high. You start interfering with commercial aircraft, even private.
Now, but how high do you think they'll be allowed to go up?
Well, drones allow 400 feet right now under normal circumstances. Now, you may have some commercial operations that may get up 1,200 feet, but you can't get too much higher because temperatures. See, you get 1,500 feet off the ground, temperatures start dropping fast.
Okay.
You up
now,
to 20.
Now, how high does the average helicopter, non-military helicopter get up off the ground?
They may be up about 1,200 feet.
Okay.
You get up to what's called flight level 350. The temperature is about 25 degrees below zero at 30,000 feet.
Okay. Well, I've been up and I didn't feel it, but I'm in that pressurized cabin.
Right, and the cabin has to be pressurized. You get up to 10,000 feet, you got to have pressurized or not. You're going to have some serious problems. You probably pass out. When you get much high, you explode.
You probably heard about it. A number of years ago, I just saw the video the other day on YouTube. There was this golfer, I forgot his name, but a malfunction happened with the pressurization of the cab. You didn't want a Learjet.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody passed out, and all pilots can do, because they sent up a pilot, and they looked and they saw everybody, the pilot was out. So all they can do is wait till the plane just crashed. Everybody became unconscious.
Yeah, you can't live up at those heights. Hell, you can't live at the top of some mountains. Some of those countries where people
well, yeah,
be up in the Himalayas.
Mount Everest, yeah, you got to be in incredible shape to climb some of these mountains out here.
Yeah, regular cattle.
Because the higher you go, the air gets thin.
Yeah, regular cattle can't survive at those levels. Well, you got certain cattle, animals that can, like limas, yaks for the weather. The people, they different up at that elevation. They're not the same as people down on the sea level.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot of things that people just don't know.
Yeah, to tackle Mount Everest, and those people have, tackled the smaller mountains first. And that's like the ultimate. But, that's a very skilled, I'm going to call it sport, very skilled.
Well, man, you running early today. It's just 11:05. Like you cut off now.
Yeah,
you get
I don't know. Robin's light is on, but Robin.
Robin probably don't fell asleep.
Yeah, because she's 3 hours behind us, and I know she had a long. She usually has a long day anyway, but her light's on, but she's recording. But she could be taking a power snooze. Somebody was moving around earlier, though. And anyway, well, Pac, I'm going to cut it short today. Because R. Kelly, I put it up there, but nobody wants to talk about him. So I guess he isn't as trending as I thought he might be.
I'm thinking about no R. Kelly. no COVID. I called a friend yesterday. Well, he ain't a friend, somebody that I know. He had a stroke after he had his two shots. He had speech impediment. Then another guy had a stroke, but I'm not sure how he got it. I talked to him yesterday, too. So that's what it is. But anyway, Ellie, I'm going to let you get on to your rest of the day. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. All right. Talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions. Took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon, that was the only time they had off, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with them.
All right, and we're going to have opportunities for people to take advantage of learning basic carpentry and basic house building. So if you're interested, please contact. We want to play that again, and then we'll be back tomorrow.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their...